upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Sweet. It worked. Welcome back to the Couch GM podcast. First off, wherever you are, can I just get a quick fist bump? Yeah, baseball is back. Finally, for the next 9 months or so, we're going to have baseball, 8 months. So get ready to get excited. You know, spring training has been awesome to watch so far. I want to get back into doing these lives more often throughout the season. So I'm going to be doing one live podcast a week. It really will be on when Mariners have an off day, or if they happen to have a day game during a Monday, then I might hop on in the evening. And of course, I'll go, you know, something else I'm wanting to do also is to go live after each Mariners game and do a quick recap talking about what happened. So if you wanted to watch that, make sure to tune into that. Look out for the live weekly podcast. I'm going to be having guests on throughout the season, various personalities throughout the Mariners, whether it's, you know, big name people. That's my goal, to get some of those guys on. We'll see if we can get some players on, some other YouTubers. It'll be a good time throughout the season. So today I wanted to kind of talk for a little bit about the Mariners and then also get into some Mariner general MLB topics and, you know, just kind of do that week to week. If you have any questions, comments, make sure to let me know on any topics that you'd like me to cover. First off, wanted to cover the sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by Black Label Supplements. So I've been taking their greens in the morning, the creatine later on, the pre-workout before lifting, the aminos during workouts, protein after, and they really have quality products, taste really good. Visit blacklabelsupplements.com and use code COUCHGM for 15% off your order. Also, make sure to check out Baseballism. They have a ton of really cool Mariners gear. There's the Griffey hat on the wall there. They're a local company that actually started in Portland. And so I got connected to some of the guys there, was able to visit their warehouse down in Portland. Really cool company. They're the official lifestyle brand of baseball. So make sure to check out baseballism.com. Code COUCHGM gets you 15% off as well. Also behind me, you see the Glance LED panel. That's glance-led.com. It's your all-in-one ticker. I use that throughout the season to track live sports and to have, obviously, behind me in my videos to track subscriber count and various other things. And then also, if you want to stream and get into YouTube like I've been doing, I stream through StreamYard. So if you go to the description of this video, there's a link that would take you to StreamYard, which is what I use for this. You're able to broadcast live across YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, Twitter, and other places. One other, you know, video series that I'm going to start, and I'm going to start live streaming, is playing MLB The Show. And you could even live stream, you know, PlayStation 5 through StreamYard, put it out onto all of those different platforms. So I'm really looking forward to that. MLB The Show is coming out March 15th. So be on the lookout for MLB The Show content if you're a fan of that as well. So this coming Thursday marks 3 weeks until opening day. So you'll see throughout spring training that a lot of the lower level guys, you know, Colt Emerson, Johnny Formello, those, you know, lower level prospects will start to be sent back down, reassigned to minor league camp. More of the regular guys that you'll be seeing throughout the lineup on opening day will be playing more games and getting more regular reps. They've, you know, the entire starting rotation now has made one rotation throughout. They've each pitched about two innings each. You've seen a majority of the starting lineup playing. You know, they play a game and then take 2 days off basically to rest. It's been a lot of fun to see these interviews specifically. Seattle Sports 710. If you haven't already, go check out Seattle Sports 710. They have interviews with most of the guys on there already. Also, Pitching Ninja was down there recently, did a lot of interviews. I wish I could be down there for spring training, getting player interviews and getting some insight on their, you know, players off season. My goal moving forward is to be able to do that every year, to get down to Arizona, hang out, you know, talk to the players, talk to the fans, and be able to make some cool content out of that. So just wanted to kind of start off by going through the Mariners opening day lineup, kind of how, you know, it projects and how I project it, and talk on each of the players and some of the notes. If you haven't already, I'm sure you've seen those couple of videos that I've put out already. One talking about the Mariners offensive lineup, and the one talking about the bullpen. And I'll be talking about the starting rotation at some point, either this week or next week. I'll be making a video on that. But Luis Castillo, so starting with the starting rotation, Luis Castillo, of course, starting it off again. Something to note is that typically he's been known to start the spring rather slow and come in not quite up to where he is in mid-season form. But apparently in his first outing, he was up to 97 miles per hour. So something from the end of last year, you know, sparked something in him, and he's coming to camp in a different shape, ready to go. He's up to 97. Don't worry about that, you know, Fernando Tatis tank that he gave up. And I'm glad that the Mariners score from yesterday isn't showing on there, because Padres put a whooping on them. But Luis Castillo, you know, he's as advertised, the ace, the rock of the rotation. And as you'll see, as we'll talk about, each of these guys, there's the starting five, and then there's the starting six, potentially seven, potentially six guys that could, if they are getting full innings, could be Cy Young contenders or dark horses, depending on how you look at it. So you got Luis Castillo leading it off in the rotation. Second off, you got George Kirby. And so they reslotted the rotation from last year to where last year it was Castillo, Gilbert, Kirby. This year they switched it to where it's Castillo, Kirby, Gilbert, at least in that first rotation. That should be how they start the season. Kirby realistically is my pick for the Cy Young. He's just elite. He's the Bob Ross of baseball. He's painting the strike zone, and he's able to place the ball wherever he wants it at close to 100 miles an hour with his off speed and breaking pitches. He's able to locate, and they're just nasty stuff. Add on top of that, he's going to be throwing one knuckleball a game if they're up by a few runs. So be on the lookout for that pitch throughout the game, probably later on in the game. He might just start off one batter with it to start the game. You never know. But one question I want to ask him on the sideline this year is, you know, what does your nine pocket workout look like? Because in an interview or a post game, he said that in the offseason, he doesn't pitch to a catcher at all. He just throws to a nine pocket. He just gets on, you know, his mound and in his spot, throws into a nine pocket all offseason. And that's how he dials in his command and is able to work on that. You know, with interviewing Noble Meyer, I asked him how he learned to command the ball. And with him, it was with catch play, to where his catch partner would set up a target. And, you know, as simple as it sounds, just throwing to that target while playing catch, he's able to dial in, you know, spotting where he wants to throw it. With George Kirby, throwing to a nine pocket is very hard. And to be able to locate like he does. I think he said to Shannon Dreyer in an interview that he hits the square that he wants to throw it into about 7 out of 10 times. I mean, you know, we've seen it with his numbers, but his command is just off the charts. So George Kirby, he's my Cy Young pick.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Logan Gilbert, pretty interesting. In a bullpen last week, I saw him signaling both for a cutter and then also for a two-seam, which he has not been throwing. There were a couple registered sinkers from last year, but it was not a pitch that he ever really threw. He was mainly a four-seam guy full of extension. And I forget who it was recently that it might have been Luke Raley, someone else talking about what makes Logan Gilbert so unique. And, you know, he joked, or whoever it was joked, that Gilbert's 97 looks like it's 108 because he's throwing it so close to home plate. But it's been confirmed, you know, on that Pitching Ninja interview, if you haven't seen that yet, that he is adding the cutter. He is going to be using that. It has a small cut, you know, just enough for him to see it from the pitcher's mound, to see it break a little bit. I'm curious what the velocity will be. Likely, you know, low 90s. And then on top of that, he's got the slider off of it. He was throwing the sinker, as I mentioned, but apparently Cal said that Logan's sinker sucks. So it sounds like we won't be seeing the sinker much from Logan Gilbert. It'll be a four-seam and cutter. And that cutter is really just to get the hitters off of that four-seam fastball. So something that's still fast, but moving enough to throw the hitter off. He looked amazing in his first start. Two innings pitched, one walk, no hits, three strikeouts. That the slider was looking good. The splitter was looking good. Solid year coming from Gilbert. And it'll be interesting to see if the Mariners are able to lock down any of these guys. I know, you know, there's all of the information about payroll and how much money is available. And I'm really hoping that they're able to lock down a guy like Kirby or Gilbert, any of those guys, to extend the length that this rotation will be able to play out to. Then you got Bryce Miller coming in at the four spot. As you've seen this offseason, he's added a splitter. And then he's also subbed a slurve for his sweeper. I'm not sure how many people are talking about that. Everyone's talking about the splitter. I think the slurve might be an underrated pitch that Bryce Miller is going to be throwing this year. And the reason for that is, as he described in interviews, last year, basically, you know, versus righties, he had 5 pitches. He had a four-seam, a two-seam, a sweeper, he was throwing a changeup, and then I think, oh yeah, a gyro slider. When a lefty would come up, he was limited to just 2 pitches. It was his four-seam fastball, and I want to say his changeup, and or his gyro slider. And so he wasn't able to throw his sweeper because it was basically an auto take pitch for the lefty hitter. But now with this slurve, it's more so like a curveball, you know, slurve, slider, curveball. So it's going to be, instead of super horizontal, it's going to be vertical with some horizontal to it. It'll play a lot more to the lefties. He'll be able to use it as a get me over, you know, strike. He'll also be able to use it in strikeout situations. And then of course that splitter is going to be huge for him this year against lefties specifically and against righties. You know, watching his last outing, you could tell that he was trying to dial in his command of that slurve and that there's some work to do with that, as well as the splitter. But if those offseason videos have anything to tell, it's going to be a nasty pitch for him. Then you got Brian Wu. You know, this will be a real telling season for him, as he hardly threw any innings, you know, in his career up until when he made his debut last year. And so how many innings he's able to pitch this year, we will have to see. But that brings us to the next guy in Emerson Hancock. you know, like I mentioned, your top five are Cy Young contenders, really. And then potentially six. You see Emerson Hancock. Right now, he's back up to 97 with his sinker. If you saw him in the Futures game a couple years ago, he was, pumping 97-mile-an-hour sinkers. And then he had some injuries. I believe it was his shoulder and some other hiccups. But seems like he's fully healthy, ready to go. So if they need to, bring Wu down a little bit at some point in the season, hopefully everyone stays healthy. The Mariners have been very fortunate with their health, especially in the rotation. You know, aside from Robbie Ray getting hurt last spring training, they haven't had anyone go down. I believe all of their starters from last year, all of these five guys made all of their starts. They didn't have to miss any starts. That's massive. So Emerson Hancock, and then in a under the radar move, they pick up Levi Stout from the Reds, who was a part of that Luis Castillo trade a couple years ago. And Levi Stout, he's been into the upper 90s, and he was a big prospect for the Mariners coming up. I'm curious if I'm not sure if Levi Stout was the Luis Castillo trade or the Eugenio Suarez and Jesse Winker trade. Let me check on that. But anyways, Levi Stout, he was a big prospect for the Mariners coming up. They traded him over to the Reds, and he's been struggling a bit. They designated him for assignment. And let's see here. Yeah, he was in the Luis Castillo trade. So there's the top six guys. There's the top five. There's the top six with Emerson Hancock. Then there's Levi Stout. Then there's a bit of, drop off as far as age is concerned in the Mariners pitching depth at starting rotation. But still, the Mariners rotation is going to be one of the best in baseball, if not the best. I'm going to be making a video talking specifically about the Mariners starting rotation this week, similar to those videos talking about the lineup and the bullpen. So be on the lookout for that one. That should be good. And then getting into the bullpen, if you've seen my Mariners bullpen video, Mariners are going to have the most valuable bullpen in my opinion. And I think it's pretty easy to make a case for that, because there's the guys that are on the Mariners depth chart currently. And then there's the guys that are not on the depth chart that realistically will be up and should be up, starting with some of those guys that were acquired this offseason in the trades for a Eugenio Suarez and for Jared Kelnick. In the a Eugenio Suarez trade, they picked up Carlos Vargas as well as Sebi Zavala. But Carlos Vargas, he's up to 101. He's got a slider. He's looked his stats are kind of par for the course, because Carlos Vargas, has pitched two innings. He has two hit by pitch. He's got one walk and three strikeouts. So they've been trying to dial in his command with the fastball and the slider. But if he's able to lock those things down, those two pitches, he's got extremely high upside. And, kind of as I talked about with Gary Hill, if you watch that podcast, I feel like all he has to do, Pete Woodworth has to do with Carlos Vargas and Jackson Coar, is to just sit down with them, show them the stats on getting ahead 0-1 versus falling behind 1-0. And that shift in mindset, it's like you have nasty stuff. You have nasty pitches. You throw 100 miles an hour. You have a ridiculous slider. Jackson Coar has a changeup that, go watch Devin Williams' film and then go watch Jackson Coar. I'm not saying that is currently there, but he's got a great, great changeup. You just throw your pitches in the zone. Just dominate the zone. Get ahead 0-1. And you're going to have that much better of stats. You're going to walk that many fewer batters because the stats.
Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. That's ridiculous going from one to the other count. Curious to see how Brash progresses Matt Brash is starting a throwing program on Tuesday. There was the big, uproar on Twitter last week when the reports were coming out that there was some inflammation on his forearm. That's never a good thing, but it sounds like it was somewhat normal is what it was sounding like, or normal from prior MRIs that he had gotten. So he's starting a throwing program on Tuesday. We'll see how that progresses. Matt Brash was one of the top, him and Justin Topa, as far as the amount of innings pitched last year, were the two most valuable players, relievers for the Mariners last year. So definitely need Brash in the back end of that bullpen. He's one of the filthiest guys in the league. Also the acquisition of Gregory Santos. It's like, Santos wasn't too much on my radar last year. I wasn't watching any White Sox games for the most part, but after looking into him, he's a baseball savant, poster child for baseball savant, the red that he has. And he's projected to be one of the top relievers in all of baseball. And the fact that they were able to get him for, Deloach and Prelander Baroa's upside basically is Gregory Santos, but Prelander Baroa hasn't been able to show that he can dominate the zone and throw strikes. He's got the command issue. Then also Gabe Spier. He was, the average baseball fan does not know who Gabe Spier is, but he was one of the best relief pitchers in all of baseball last year. And he was the only relief pitcher, only pitcher in all of baseball in the 90th percentile or higher in chase percentage, walk percentage, and ground ball percentage. That's Gabe Spier. And this year, he's coming in to the season with a new splitter and a new cutter. He has a four-seam fastball, two-seam fastball, a slider, and then he's learning a splitter right now. And then he's also coming in with a cutter. So another big year from Gabe Spier. That's, there's the back three of the bullpen in Brash, Santos, Munoz, but it's really the back four in Spier. And then you throw in a Jackson Coar, a Carlos Vargas, these other guys with an insanely high upside. No one wants to face the Mariners bullpen. And after facing the Mariners starting rotation for the first 6 to 7 to 8 innings, good luck getting hits. And then, as we'll get into with this lineup, much more consistency in this lineup that allows the Mariners to have a better chance at winning games day in and day out. And, hopefully not 2-1 games. Or losing 1-2 games, but if their lineup could put up 4, 5, 6 runs in a game, consistently 3 runs, then the Mariners pitching staff should be able to shut them down. Then getting into the lineup, I'm curious what your thoughts are on the lineup. If you're on here, please let me know how you would structure the lineup, because I play a decent amount of MLB The Show, and that's why I call myself the Couch GM, because it's like, hey. I feel like I can structure the lineup pretty well based on handiness versus on the strengths versus on, if I'm actually the coach and I'm writing a lineup, this is how I'd write it. And so you got JP Crawford leading off. He had the highest on-base percentage for the Mariners last year. He tied Julio Rodriguez in OPS last year, on-base plus slugging. He had the highest on-base percentage. He led the American League in walks last year. Whether he's able to replicate his success from last year, we'll have to see, but I believe he was still, working out a driveline this off season. He learned something there. And, as I mentioned in that video, he really got into his pull side last year, which was able, allowed him to get into his power. He tripled his home run production, basically going from 6 home runs, I believe, to 19 year over year, which is a ridiculous jump. So we'll see if he can keep that, on base skill alive this year. Batting second, of course, is Julio. Last year, he was really thrown into the spotlight. He came up as a rookie, this massive prospect, and he performed incredibly well. Last year, he was, you could argue he was one of the faces of baseball. He was on every commercial that you could see from MLB. Of course, there's Shohei Ohtani. He's the face of baseball. There's Mike Trout. there's Ronald Acuna, but Julio is one of those guys. And there were so many different things, or, you know, media outlets, people that were pulling at him from each way, to where, you know, at times he might have been overloaded with what he had going on. And in interviews, you know, in his opening press conference in spring training this year, he talked about how, you know, he needs to be better, and he didn't do as good as he, you know, wanted to in certain situations, and that no one is going to want him to do better than he wants to do for the team. And so Julio wants to win more than anything. And he's mentioned, you know, in that interview with Seattle Sports 710, that he's really started to tighten his circle and to focus in on the routine that he needs to do day in and day out, so that he can focus on the number one thing is his production on the field. You know, everything else is secondary. And he even said, you know, he'd love to be able to stand there and sign baseballs for fans and, you know, motivate kids to pursue their dreams and play baseball and do all these things. But if it's taking away from his pregame routine and from his ability to be able to produce in the game, then he needs to cut it out. So, like myself on the sideline, I'd love to talk to Julio, but at the same time, you have 1,000 people that want to talk to him. So that's where it's tough for me. It's like, I don't necessarily want to really ask him for his time, because I know how much he has on his plate. I'd rather talk to, you know, other people that don't get as much airtime. Anyways, Julio Rodriguez, superstar, batting second. He, you know, as he goes, the team goes, but the rest of this lineup gives the potential to not have as much of a load on Julio's back throughout the season. Batting third, of course, is second baseman Jorge Polanco, switch hitter. That was a huge pickup this offseason. Mariners have wanted to go get Jorge Polanco for a while, hearing Justin Hollander and Jerry Depoto talking about Jorge Polanco. They've had conversations in the past. It just never worked out. Adding a switch hitter to your lineup just makes things so much more, you know, flexible, you could say. It just adds so much more depth to it, to where you don't have to worry about handiness, especially this guy, Jorge Polanco. Throughout his 10-year, 11-year career, he's a career 269 average hitter from both sides of the plate. His splits are dead even as far as batting average. He has a bit more power from the left side of the plate, so against right-handed pitchers. But again, you know, that's just an easy, the 1 through 3 are going to be the everyday guys. Jorge Polanco, it'll be a matter of if they can keep him healthy, and that's a consistency in this lineup is the health thing. But Jorge Polanco, you get him, you know, 140 games, 130 games. That's a great looking lineup. A lot of production coming from that guy. And he hit 33 home runs a few years ago. And the Jorge Polanco trade was like one of the trades that, one of, if not the only trades that the Mariners fans were actually wanting or predicting. You know, there was rumors of, or people were wanting them to go get Max Kepler also. But Jorge Polanco has been a target for Mariners fans for a bit. And so that was cool to see him in that trade. Sucks to lose Justin Topa, but you know, Jorge Polanco is going to be a stud, and dude looks jacked in spring training. You know, there's the injury concerns, but from what we've seen, he hasn't looked great at the plate so far. That's what spring training is for. And as I mentioned, the regulars will get more time the rest of the way, but he's going to be a stud. Mitch Garber, just please don't let him put on a catcher's glove. I know that he was, you know, catching bullpens. I think he was a catcher during one of these spring games. Just whatever you do, do not let him catch. All of his injuries outside of him pulling something, rounding first base a couple years ago, all of his injuries, all of the time that he missed on the field was because he was a catcher. It's the most dangerous position on the field. And so if he's able to play DH, get 140 games, 150 games, I mean, 120 games, 130 games, the production that Mitch Garber can provide for the Mariners lineup. You got the on-base, the American League leader in walks leading off. You got Julio second. You got a ton of speed on base right there. If Julio is able to get on, Polanco from both sides of the plate, he's going to, you know, get a single, Mitch Garver is to be there to clean up whoever's on base is going to be huge this season. And as you've seen in his player profile, it sounds like a clickbait thing, but Mitch Garver has been the best fastball hitter in all of baseball since the start of the 2019 season. If you take out the 2020 season, and that's by WOBA, which is weighted on base average. And WOBA is a Fangraphs metric. And essentially WOBA, you know, like with Baseball Reference, there's on base percentage, there's OPS. Those take into account, you know, did you get on base or did you not get on base? WOBA takes into account how you got on base. And so a double is more valuable than a single, a triple is more valuable than a single or a double. And then a home run is the most valuable thing, right? And so since Mitch Garver has been crushing the four-seam fastball, hitting a ton of home runs off of it, his OPS is so high off of it, or his slug, that's why his weighted on base average is so high against the pitch. And if you go off of WOBA, which factors in how you get on base, Mitch Garver has the best WOBA on four-seam fastballs since the 2019 season, if you take out 2020. So really excited to see JP, Julio, Polanco, Garver. That I'm really excited to see that. And as I said to open up the Mariners lineup video, only four out of the nine guys in this lineup were in the opening lineup last year. They've made a lot of change to this lineup. They got rid of, you know, Jared Kelnick, Eugenio Suarez, and Teoscar Hernandez, the three guys on the team with a 30% or higher strikeout rate. Now, Luke Grayley does have over a 30% strikeout rate, but Luke Grayley's upside might be drinking the Kool-Aid, higher upside than Kelnick, potentially. Same thing with Canzone. I've heard the same thing, that Canzone might be able to provide a higher upside than Kelnick had. And, you know, Kelnick never was able to show that he could hit at the big league level. They were able to move on. And now the lineup is much more of a consistent lineup, to where there's a much better chance of guys getting on base in some capacity, and then the next guy getting on base in some capacity, and then the next guy, versus them hitting, you know, Gino or, you know, Teo, Gino, Kelnick, to where there's basically log jams there. You're hoping that they walk, or you're hoping that they hit a home run, because it's pretty likely that they're going to strike out. And to be able to have a more consistent lineup, especially later in games, gives you a much better shot at winning games, winning those close games, and being consistent and consistently producing runs. But Luke Grayley, in his player profile, he's the most underrated or under the radar power speed threat in baseball. He was one of 10 players with a barrel percentage and sprint speed in the 80th percent or higher. Luke Grayley, you know, he's 28 years old. He was just given his first big opportunity in the big leagues with the Rays last year. So I would have Luke Grayley batting fifth. You know, there's going to be people that say put Cal Raleigh five. I say Grayley because he has the higher upside overall. Cal Raleigh, you know, he barrels the ball. His power is his production. But Cal Raleigh, you know, he 230 hitter, 240 maybe. I'd much rather have Luke Grayley there to be able to keep the lineup going. And then instead of having Garber and Raleigh back to back, you know, with the speed thing, you got Luke Grayley behind Garber to get on base ahead of Cal Raleigh, and then Ty France, you know, after Cal Raleigh there. And from what we've seen so far in spring training, that Ty France driveline factor is a legit thing. He was talking about his diet on Seattle Sports 710. He just locked in, was focusing on eating protein, getting rid of carbs. He's obviously lost some weight. He's moving on the bases like we've never seen him before. Add on top of that, the fact that he's able to increase his barrel speed by like 3.5 miles per hour. Ty France is a pure hitter when it comes down to it. And he's been able to hit at every level up until the 2022 season when he got hurt in Oakland at first base. Ty France resurgence is real. And the fact that he's batting seven in my ideal lineup doesn't say, you know, to his production, or doesn't say that, you know, Ty France is bad. Ty France's down year was league average. he's been averaging like 25 to 30% above league average production consistently when he's been in the lineup since he made his debut. So if he's able to get back to that spot and he's batting seven, that really tells you something about this lineup that and the depth that they have. Now I'm curious, like, where would you guys bat Mitch Haniger? I'm curious where you would bat Mitch Haniger. Because, you know, I have him and Canzone as a platoon down at eight. And I'm really curious on how many at-bats Haniger is going to get this year. Of course, he can go for 39 and 100 like he did in 2021. That's a possibility. That's in there somewhere. If he can still do it is to be told. But there's many reasons why he was brought back to the Mariners. It wasn't just for his bat, I feel. It was also for his leadership, his approach to the game, his work ethic, hard work, you know, mentorship for the young guys that that are on this roster. I think that will be huge. And, you know, we're going to have 2 years of Mitch Haniger now. And building off of that, Dominic Canzone, as I mentioned before with Luke Raley, both of those guys potentially have higher upside than Kelenic. And Canzone apparently has added 15 pounds of muscle this offseason. And Canzone, like Ty France, is a pure hitter. He had like a 330 batting average in college, a 310 batting average throughout the minor leagues. And he's been able to hit at every level. He just had his first exposure to the big leagues last year. And if you give Canzone 400 plus plate appearances to be able to figure it out. And that's the real thing with Haniger also. How many at-bats and games are you going to give him in the outfield where he could potentially get hurt? And then every day that you're starting Haniger, you're not allowing either Raley or Canzone to start and to get their ABs. And like Luke Raley has said in the past, he wasn't able to get consistent at bats in his time. So that it's hard to be able to produce when you don't know when you're driving to the ballpark, what's going to be happening that day. Or if you're going to be able to get the ABs, or if you're just going into the cage in the eighth inning to come in for an at bat versus someone that's throwing 100 miles an hour with a splitter, you know, being able to give Luke Raley and Dominic Canzone the plate appearances and the reps that they need to be able to take that next step, because those guys are the potential long-term solutions at the corner outfield. So I'm curious to see how that goes with Haniger and Canzone. And then Josh Rojas and Luis Arias, you know, all you can hope for is that they're able to produce in the field and hit somewhere around league average and provide that stopgap for whoever comes up next. And if you haven't seen DePoto on Seattle Sports 710 this last week, go give that a watch because it's pretty telling. Either Locklear or Cole Young likely are going to make their debut this year at third base. Cole Young turns 21 in July. Cole Young could realistically become the third baseman for the Mariners in 2025 as a 21-year-old. Like, Cole Young's talent is legit. And we saw him, you know, he hit a home run the other day. He had hit a double the other day as well. Cole Young, we could see Cole Young playing third base as a 21-year-old or as a 20-year-old if he comes up before July. As far as Locklear, he's a 23-year-old. DePoto also had super high praise with him about his power and about his glove. He's another realistic option at third base. And then you look at Colt Emerson. If you don't already, go check out Prospects Live with Joe Doyle. He had Jerry DePoto on his Patreon last week or the week before that. And DePoto was pretty telling with Colt Emerson because DePoto was alluding to the fact that Colt Emerson might be able to debut as a teenager. Colt Emerson right now is just 18 years old. He turns 19 in July and DePoto was talking about him debuting as a teenager. So, you know, he turns 19 in July. So by next year, July, Colt Emerson coming up in, whether it's third base, you know, second base, you just kind of have to find a spot for him. Colt Emerson looks like, you know, the next Kyle Seager type. He put on a ton of weight good weight with the muscle, and he's got some really good pop and upside. So third base for the Mariners is going to be really intriguing, and not because, you know, I wouldn't necessarily look down on Rojas and Urias, but look at the fact that Cole Young or Tyler Locklear is going to be your third baseman. You slot one of those guys in at the ninth spot in your lineup playing third base. That makes, you know, the turn to the rotation back to JP. If you have Cole Young batting nine, he's got that speed power at nine, and then you got JP right there to just lead it back off. There's really no true holes in this lineup like there was in the years past when you have Tommy La Stella, AJ Pollock, and all these guys. You know, Colton Wong looked like a good pickup that obviously didn't work, but this lineup has the depth that they haven't had in the past. Then you add on to that the potential bench there. You also got Ryan Bliss that could come up and just be a utility infielder, you know, if they move on from Sam Haggerty or Dylan Moore, some of these guys. Let me get into your comments real quick. I'll circle back here if we have any Mariners questions or topics questions, and then I'll get into the MLB general topics. Talk for like 38 minutes. So one question, is there any team series that you're excited about looking at this season? Let me run through the schedule real quick. Atlanta with JK's homecoming should be interesting. Yeah. I hope that Jared Kelnick, you know, gets it together, able to figure it out. But I went back last night to watch a couple of Jared Kelnick's at bats, and you know, looks pretty similar to what we were seeing. And I was all on that Jared Kelnick train for 3 years. Okay. Jared Kelnick is now 1-for-18 in spring training. If you think back to last year, you know, I was comparing Kelnick to Harper's swing in spring training, and he was crushing it. He's 1-for-18 now with an 0.56 batting average. Let me see how many strikeouts. 4 strikeouts now. Yeah. There's a lot of time, but if they put him at, you know, 9 in that lineup, he was batting 2nd for the Braves the other day. That would be a mess. Okay. So looking at the schedule, I'm looking forward to that Red series. Red series at home. You know, the Reds are a really intriguing team. Of course, you got Ellie De La Cruz, you got Hunter Green, you got Brandon Williamson, a former prospect, Noel V. Marte. Edwin Arroyo, I think, was doing really good this spring training so far. The Reds, I mean, Jake Fraley came out of nowhere and was performing for the Reds last year. Let's see what other series we got. But yeah, okay, so yeah, you got the Reds at home, you got the Braves at home. And then of course there's the Blue Jays, there's the Astros that come to town. The Phillies at home will be good. The Giants. I really like that every team plays every team now. I think that's really cool that there's the interleague play, that every team is going to be playing every team. So I would say the Red series, which is April 15th through the 17th, that's a Monday through Wednesday. And then the Braves in Seattle, which is 2 weeks after that, I think are going to be the series that I'll be looking at. Again, if you have any questions, comments, let me know. I'll get to it right now. Ian says, what do you think about the bullpen options now? None of the wildcard spots seem solid. I mean, you know, they're not on the roster right now, but like I said, Carlos Vargas and Jackson Coar, I think they have high upside there. Right now you have Andres Munoz, Matt Brash, Gregory Santos, Taylor Saucedo, Gabe Spire, Trent Thornton, and Austin Voth on the bullpen depth chart online. So we'll have to see how Matt Brash progresses with his throwing program. We'll have to see how Gregory Santos progresses with his throwing program. Assuming that everything goes good, you know, you basically have, I don't know exactly how many guys they're gonna hold on their roster. I guess it only shows, you know, seven guys in the bullpen in the big leagues. If any guys were to bounce out, then it would be Austin Both and Trent Thornton. Trent Thornton, I think, will have a solid year. He's got some good stuff. He's coming in with a new pitch. I believe it was a splitter. Yeah, that he's working on. So really Austin Both, but he's the extended reliever type guy. So Carlos Vargas or Jackson Coar, I say would come up and produce. Canzone is a perfect nine hole. Yeah. And yeah, it might make sense to have Canzone at the nine instead of Luis Urias and Josh Rojas. Have them at eight so that you can, you know, have them have it someone with a little more, you know, oomph to be able to lead into the top of the lineup. Yeah, I'm in the Jack said, I'm curious as to why Brian Anderson isn't getting talked about as a nod for a nod at third base. In my lineup video, I did mention Brian Anderson. He's another potential guy. He had a dinger in spring training. So, I mean, if Luis Urias is hurt, then, you know, likely Brian Anderson would end up making the roster opening day. If Luis Urias, because, you know, Urias apparently has a hurt throwing shoulder or a shoulder right now. So, Alex asks, what are your thoughts with third base? I've heard Franz might get time, maybe another trade with the Giants now that they have Chapman. I honestly put like next to nothing on the Franz playing third base thing. I think that would be a last resort because, I mean, you hear Perry Hill talking with Gary Hill about the utility infielders. I think you have a better shot at Dylan Moore playing third base than Ty France, to be honest, because Ty France has been playing first base for how many years now? He came up with the Padres and he was playing some second base. He did play third a while back, but he just has never been playing there recently. I would see, and like Perry Hill said, what I was getting to was that if you're a utility infielder, he expects you to play every position. So Dylan Moore and Sam Haggerty assumably can play every position in the infield and really in the outfield. So whereas Ty France has been only a first baseman for years, it would be that much harder for him to transition to third base than to have Dylan Moore or Sam Haggerty. Sure, it doesn't look, you know, sexy on paper, but that's probably a better route to go than to have Ty France move from first base, because then you'd have to slot in who? Like Luke Raley or Dominic Canzone at first base, who have been playing outfield for their entire careers. So you'd either have to try to get them to all learn new positions, or you could slot in Dylan Moore, who's already been practicing every position in the infield to be able to produce there. That's just my thought. And then also, like I mentioned, Tyler Locklear or Cole Young potentially coming up at some point is what DePoto alluded to. And that would be the best case scenario, really. Reflect the Sun. Is there a good place you find spring training player stats? I just go to MLB.com for MLB spring training stats. You just type in their name and then it's going to be, yeah, MLB.com. So now we'll get into some MLB general topics and notes. I mean, just the state of MLB is at such an exciting spot right now with the amount of talent, young talent that's coming up and that we're going to be able to watch this year. Like Jackson Holliday, the number one overall prospect in baseball. You got Paul Skenes, the number two overall prospect in baseball, I believe. those two guys faced off. And a big issue is like, why can't you just stream every game? It's 2024, like throw an Apple Vision Pro on these umps and like, let's watch the game. You know, like Paul Skeens faced Jackson Holliday the other day, the top two prospects in all of baseball, and it was not televised. There was no video of it. So do something to have everything available. You know, the Mariners did their two trial streams that were awesome. You're able to watch the game, but they're not going to be doing that the rest of the year, apparently, or the rest of the spring. So they got some stuff to figure out, but just the state of the of baseball in general, I think, is in a great spot with Jackson Holliday, Paul Skeens, Dylan Cruz, James Wood for the Nationals has been hitting tanks. He's going to be coming up. He's, you know, 6'6", 6'7". You got Yoshinobu Yamamoto for the Dodgers. He's going to be filthy. All of these different guys that are coming over from Japan, Jung-Ho Lee with the Giants, Shota Imanaga with the Cubs. Then you got the other young guys in Jackson Chourio, who hasn't debuted yet, but signed that extension with the Brewers. You got Nuelvi Marte with the Reds. He's going to be a ton of fun to watch with progression. You got Noble Meyer, who played baseball here in Portland, top, you know, 10th overall to the Marlins. Realistically, Noble Meyer is going to be debuting as a 20-year-old. He's filthy. And then you got 17-year-old catcher Ethan Salas for the Padres, who realistically is going to debut next year as like an 18-year-old, which is unheard of. Then also, like, you know, you got Max Clark and just all these endless amounts of guys that are top prospects coming up. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Apparently Max Clark was up to 97 off the mound in high school. So he's going to be a fun one to watch. We'll see if the Tigers can ever compete. And then as far as the jerseys are concerned, it sounds like Rob Manfred was making his rounds with the teams in spring training, and Cal Raleigh specifically said that Manfred was making his rounds and that, you know, he was a part of that discussion with him and that jerseys did come up. And then Cal alluded to the fact that he has faith that the jerseys will be fixed. So to what extent they will be fixed is yet to be seen. There's two different issues. One is that the MLB logo is lower on the jersey, which pushes everything closer together. And then the second thing is that the names are smaller. Aside from the Royals, if you saw one of my shorts that I posted, the Royals apparently fought against MLB, and MLB granted the Royals an exception to use the font size from last year. So only the Royals have the big, you know, block font that that everyone was wearing last year, and then everyone else has the shrunken names. So players don't like it. Fans hate it. So it should be changed, but we'll see to what extent. There's some new rules for 2024 in baseball. If you didn't already know, the pitch clock is even faster. The mound visits have been reduced. The base path has been widened a bit. So starting with the pitch clock, in 2023, 9-inning games averaged 2 hours and 39 minutes, down nearly 25 minutes from 2022. Some of these changes that were voted on by the competition committee that, you know, that will include the shortening of the pitch clock, the runners on base, and decreasing the amount of visits. The competition committee that voted on these rule changes are 6 owners, 4 players, and 1 umpire. So even if all of the players and the umpire voted in one way, if the owners decided to vote another way, then the owners would win 10 times out of 10. I mean, make that make sense. Makes no sense. So that obviously needs to change, because the players voted against these rule changes and against shortening the pitch clock again. But because the owners voted on it, it's now put into place, which is unacceptable. That makes no sense. It's trying to basically show that you have a say in something without you actually having a say in it at all. And the MLB Players Association actually released a statement after the league's announcement that players had voted against the rule. And they stated that immediate additional changes are unnecessary and offer no meaningful benefit. The MLB Players Association director, Tony Clark, said, he also said that this season should be used to gather additional data and fully examine the health, safety, and injury impacts of reduced recovery time. That is where our focus will be. And so we don't know to what extent the pitch clock in the first place had on the players as far as health and all these different factors. And now they're deciding to move it up even more without even being able to fully see how things have affected players. So the time between pitches with runners on base is now reduced to 18 seconds. It was at 20 seconds last year. And then with the bases empty, the pitch clock will remain at 15 seconds. So now it's 15 seconds with no one on base, and then 18 seconds instead of 20 seconds when there's runners on base. And according to MLB, pitchers began their deliveries with an average of 7.3 seconds remaining on the 20-second timer in 2023. So you would figure that the average this year would be that they would release the ball with, you know, 5 seconds remaining. But we'll see. I'm always on the side of, you know, less rules. Let the players play, let the coaches coach, and whoever wins, wins. It's like outputting your, you know, overreach on the game and changing these things. Another thing that was changed is the amount of mound visits. So the amount of mound visits allowed per team will be reduced from 5 to 4. The MLB notes that teams only average 2.3 mound visits per game, and that 98% of the games would not have exceeded a limit of 4 mound visits. So we'll see if that affects anything. Another thing is that pitchers who warm up, a pitcher who was sent to the mound to warm up between innings must now face at least one batter. I guess in the past you could send him out to warm up, and if you decided to switch, then you can still do so. They're clearing that up to where if you go out to warm up between innings, you have to face at least one batter, which is different from the typical rule that if you bring a new pitcher in, you have to face 3 hitters now. So this one says if you bring someone in to the mound to warm up between innings, they must face at least one batter. And then MLB says that there were 24 occasions last year that a pitcher warmed up between innings and was replaced before throwing a pitch. So adding approximately 3 minutes of dead time per event. It's ridiculous that they're trying to shave off like 3 minutes of a game. I mean, that's just ridiculous to me. It's like, it's America's pastime. You want to go to a game to enjoy the environment, to be there with the fans and your family and friends and experience the game. And all they're trying to do is collect your tickets, sell some jerseys, sell some hats, you know, sell some beer and some food and get you out the door as fast as possible so that they could shut off the lights and, you know, reduce their overhead. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. And then the last thing that was added to the game is the running lane. So the runner's lane towards first base will now include the space between the foul line and the infield grass. That adds 18 to 24 inches to the runner's lane, which MLB explains now allows batters to take a more direct path to first base while retaining protection from interference. So last year they made bigger bases in part to help with the safety as well as increased stolen bases. Now they're widening the base path, the runner lane, to allow people to have more room to run. And then the last, you know, MLB generic note is, if you didn't yet see today, that Zach Wheeler signed a 3-year, $126 million contract extension with the Phillies, which is the highest average annual value for an extension specifically in MLB history. He's going to be paid $42 million per year. That puts him fourth on the list in highest average annual value as a whole. He's behind Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer, who have $43.3 million per year in salary. And then, of course, way behind Shohei Ohtani with $70 million average annual value. So with that, if you have any questions, let me know. I'll hang around for another few minutes here. And thank you everyone for tuning in. Make sure to like and subscribe. And if you play MLB The Show or want to watch some MLB The Show content, let me know, because MLB The Show is going to be coming out March 15th. I'm going to be live streaming once a week you know, playing some Diamond Dynasty. Alex asks, do we have a third base and second base prospect coming up anytime soon? I'm not as familiar with our farm guys. Not a fan of this revolving door since Cano and Seager and Gino. Yeah, so I mean, we should have really long-term options for third base and second base and shortstop whenever J.P. Crawford, you know, moves on. He's under contract through the 2020. He becomes a free agent in 2027. But I mean, you have legit guys coming up, legit prospects, and you know, as you've seen in the Mariners, J.P. Crawford contract, as you've seen in the Mariners drafts recently, they had gone pitcher heavy for a while, and now that their rotation is stacked, their bullpen is deep, all these different things, they had a surplus of pitching that are now at the major leagues. They've transitioned to drafting those bat guys over the past few years. So that's where Cole Young was drafted a couple years ago. This last year in the first round, they took Colt Emerson, Ty Pete, Johnny Formello, all bats. Ty Pete and Colt Emerson are legit infield guys that will be able to replace. You know, J.P. Crawford is under contract through the 2026 season, so three more years. So realistically, you got Tyler Locklear, you got Cole Young, you got Ryan Bliss at second base also. You also have Ty Pete and Colt Emerson that will also contribute within the next 3 years, realistically. So JP has 3 years left. As soon as JP is, you know, about to leave out the door, you've got Ty Pete, you've got Colt Emerson that will come up before then. You got Cole Young at third base. So, and as DePoto alluded to, if you haven't watched the Seattle Sports 710, you know, interview with him this last week, he talked super highly of Cole Young and of Tyler Locklear. And so to answer your question, third base, second base prospects coming up anytime soon, realistically, we'll see Tyler Locklear and or Cole Young, and we should see Ryan Bliss. You know, at some point, we'll see how long they go with the Luis Arias, Josh Rojas third base, and with health and all these different things. We'll also see how long they stick with Sam Haggerty, Dylan Moore, all these guys, or if they want to give opportunities to those younger guys like the Cole Young and Ryan Bliss. Those three guys are legit guys, are legit prospects. And so Mariners are in a good spot, I think, in the infield. Let's see here. Wow. The Reflect the Sun says the AL had 454 more steals in 2023 than 2022. That's insane. I mean, yeah, I'm curious how many the NL had, because Acuna went 40-70. I mean, Acuna alone, you know. Yeah, Mitchell's alluding to 2029 can't come soon enough. Rob Manfred needs to get out of the game. Just go find a beach somewhere. Do his thing. Just get away from the game. Because nothing good comes from anything that he's done in a long time. So the automated strike zone, that would be, I mean, the only way that I would want to see it is if they have like challenges of strikes. You know, you have like two team challenges a game or three team challenges a game, and the batter or the catcher could, or the pitcher can tap their head if they want to go to the scoreboard. I think that'd be a lot of fun for fans to, you know, see that live on the big screen, the pitch coming in, you know, like on tennis, to where they show the slow motion court with a tennis ball. It was in or out, like the same type of thing with baseball. I think that'd be fun. And also, you'd be able to just What if like Angel Hernandez had like 20 pitch calls challenged against him in a game and he loses like 18 of them? Then I think, you know, his whole suing the MLB for discrimination and not allowing him in to umpire in the playoffs, there'd be some evidence there as to why he's not allowed, on top of the umpire scorecards that we already get. Who do you think will be our steals leader this year, given the huge jump in steals occurring with these rule changes? Well, I mean, the easy answer is Julio. I'm curious, you know, how much they'll let him run. I think they'll let him fly this year. At some point, they'll try to slow that down and really watch that. But I don't know if there's any burners on the base path outside of Julio. Let me look. Ryan Bliss, I mean, if he comes up, I know that he's got quite a bit of steals. Yeah, so Dominic Canzone, he has one stolen base last year. Ryan Bliss, if he comes up. Ryan Bliss in 2023 had 55 stolen bases. Ryan Bliss last year through AA and AAA batted 304 with a 902 OPS. He had a 378 on base percentage. Dude had 55 stolen bases on top of 23 home runs and 86 RBIs. So if Ryan Bliss comes up and plays over half the season, I would say Ryan Bliss is going to lead the team in steals. Yeah, to Jack Cole Young at third. That seems to be the route. Who is one under the radar pitcher and one position player you've liked so far in spring training that could be a difference maker? I mean, he's not under the radar, but Cole Young, I mean, just the fact that he's 20 years old right now makes him under the radar, I would say. You know, Tyler Locklear is the other option. None of the other like very young guys like Johnny Formello or Ty Pete or Colt Emerson are realistically going to come up this year. So I don't see that as a realistic possibility. Ryan Bliss is another guy. Whoever out of those that you would call is under the radar. I think the diehard Mariner fans know who those guys are, but the average fan probably doesn't know who Ryan Bliss, Tyler Locklear, maybe not even Cole Young are. So one of those guys. Pitcher, these still might be under the radar. You know, the Carlos Vargas, Jackson Coar. I think a lot more people are talking about Carlos Vargas now at this point in the spring with the positive stuff coming out on Twitter. So I would say Jackson Coar for the pitcher. And then, you know, of course, there's the starting rotation guys of Emerson Hancock can come up and produce. We'll see. I'm really curious to see how Levi Stout does now that he's back in the Mariners pitching. With their pitching coaches back where he was before. Do I think we'll get a deal done with Cal? It's not likely. I mean, he said he had a, you know, the answer that you'd want to hear the other week when he was asked if he wants to stay in Seattle. And you know, of course he says that he wants to stay in Seattle. Cal is under contract through the age through 2027. You know, he's going to start getting pretty expensive in the later years of arbitration. As much as I hate to say it, at some point, I'd more so see them trading Cal at some point and have Harry Ford come up, because they're not going to move Harry Ford from catcher. He's got, you know, ADD, so he loves being able to play catcher and be in the game. Every play that allows him to focus on the game. Add on top of that, Harry Ford's bat. But I hope that they do sign Cal. I love Cal. Jack says, under the radar guys, Samad Taylor and Ty Buttrey. I know we got Smad from the Royals, and he hit a home run. I think his first at bat. Yeah, he's another radar guy. I actually potentially have a connection with Smad Taylor. I'm trying to work on getting him on potentially. Also some other guys. Thank you everyone for tuning in this week on the podcast. I'll be live again at some point next week on the podcast. We'll see at what point I get some guests on, and hope to see you then. Thanks for the support. We'll see you next time.